This program is brought to you by the partners of A Rood Awakening International. Help others find truth. Support A Rood Awakening International today.
There's a gas station at Mount Sinai and villagers at Mount Sinai, some of whom will rat on you for climbing Mount Sinai unless you pay them off. Modern-day Mount Sinai is certainly the Wild West of the Near East, but it's open for business. And tonight, you can go there, and we'll tell you how with Kevin Fisher. It is Sinai, New Discoveries with Kevin Fisher, Episode 4, because it's the end of the sixth day, the sun is set, and this is Shabbat Night Live. Well, Shabbat Shalom, Torah fans. Welcome to Shabbat Night Live with Michael Rood. In the 1980s, you know, Ron White and his sons were nearly killed for sneaking into Saudi Arabia just to get a glimpse of Mount Sinai and the altar to the golden calf. Yet today's Saudi is very different. Saudi Arabia, that is. You can get a tourist visa now to visit Mount Sinai for yourself without an issue. Well, for the most part. Kevin Fisher will share some entertaining stories about that tonight. But first, it's the astronomically and agriculturally correct biblical Hebrew calendar. We are now on the eighth month, Mar Heshvan, and you'll see that at the bottom of your screen. This calendar features images of the Revelation scroll. If you have the calendar, you know that. And if you don't have one, perhaps you'd like to get a scroll. It's a linear timeline of the book of the Revelation, and you can get a copy of it at your house by going to aroodawakening.tv/revscroll. Now, please welcome my co-host, the Partner Services Director at A Rood Awakening International, David Robinson.
Shabbat Shalom, bud.
Shabbat Shalom. Now, something very interesting is happening at Mount Sinai. There's a gas station. We know that. There's a village. There's some crazy villagers, you know, that type of thing, and some extortion going on. But more interestingly, there is a large city called Neom. We touched on this a little bit last week. A $500 billion project. Here up on the screen here, you can see a news article from just a few weeks ago. There are some it's going ahead. I mean, there are contracts being signed for the design of this thing. So right. It is going ahead. And one of the biggest things is a desalination plant. Now, we're just going to watch a video here for a second, and then you have some background in this, and I want you to give maybe some explanation as to what's going on here. So let's watch a video.
The world is getting warmer. Water is becoming scarcer. Neom is using pioneering technology to create fresh water from sunlight. This is how it works. The technology involves bringing in seawater via a glass-enclosed aqueduct system, heating the water as it flows towards a giant desalinator in the form of a dome. An array of mirrors focuses concentrated solar radiation onto the glass and a highly conductive steel frame structure that then transfers the heat to the cauldron below. As a result of this process, the pressurized steam produced is discharged through an outlet from where the steam condensate is piped as fresh water to reservoirs and irrigation channels. This pilot project promises to revolutionize the process of water desalination, producing low-cost, sustainable fresh water and thus addressing one of the world's most pressing problems. Neom is an accelerator of human progress, and the future of water starts here.
Okay, so that's the technology being used at Neom. Very high tech. I mean, that's what Neom's all about. They want to be the best of everything. They've got, you know, they want to be a hub for sports all over the world. They want to have this giant desalination plant. So, David, you have a background in this. You actually developed a backpack version of this for, what was it, soldiers? Is that what you were doing it for?
We actually did it for just life support. I mean, that you could, you know, for campers, hunters, a lot of preppers would buy the backpack that had sediment and carbonite filters in it that then passed over UV technology through a lamp and then it would get rid of all the, you know, the microorganisms, the bad stuff. And you would have 90, you could never say 100%. You always had to say 99.9% pure water, but we actually took samples or withdrew water from the Mississippi, and I don't think it gets any dirtier than that. And, so yeah, we did that, and we were moving forward to do a desalination, like a portable desalination unit. And the technology that they're using here is they're using concentrated solar radiation, as you see in the video, and they basically heat the water up. And then what happens is they, by desalination, what that means is just removing the mineral components from the saline water. So then what they do, it's a lot more complicated than you see in that video, but then what they do is they take the steam from this heated water and where the mineral falls, and they take the steam and they pump that out. And I'm sure they go through other filtration systems after they pump the steam out, the moisture of the water that is.
So is it like water distillation, or is it a little more complicated than that?
I think it's a lot more complicated than that. I would really love to see exactly... that is just a surface drawing that they're showing us in that video. I would really like to see what all is entailed with that.
Very interesting. So NEOM is doing this, and it's going to be a high-tech center for the entire world. So very exciting. It's interesting, though, because, you know, Israel was very up on doing desalination. They were one of the first places in the world to do it on a big scale.
Yeah.
And so...
And that's what people do. You can find it where countries do it on a large scale. And that's why we personally were concentrating on a small scale. Like if, you know, you were on a boat and were stranded in the ocean, you had this backpack, you can actually have pure drinking water up to 120 gallons a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. Wow.
This is going to be really interesting. And, you know, like I told you last week, the only thing about this is it's really exciting. It really is. But I'm worried about, you know, the artifacts that, you know, people like Kevin Fisher and everyone's going over and looking and discovering things. And I worry that some of this stuff is going to be bulldozed over and lost forever. But hopefully there'll be organizations that come forth and go, hey, let's preserve these things.
And I hope you're right, because let's put up the map on the screen here. So there's the map of where NEOM is going to be, and you can see it's basically right across the Red Sea from Nuweiba. I mean, they actually show Nuweiba there. We've circled it in red, and that is where that's where NEOM is going to be, and Mount Sinai is smack dab in the middle of that. And I would hope they make Mount Sinai some kind of national park, or maybe some kind of central park thing in the middle of the city or something to preserve it, like you said, so that not everything gets bulldozed over and things remain where they are, because essentially things have remained there for 3,000 years untouched in the dry heat of the desert. It's basically been baked into history, and no one's been touching it.
That's right. And so when you know you have an influx of people, you know, you have to worry about that. Even with, you know, the people that are starting to go there more each and every day, there's been some things that have been defaced there. You know, we're talking about the menorah that has been scratched off, probably the oldest petroglyphic drawing or writing or whatever, and it's no longer there because, you know. So they're definitely going to have some sort of system to guard these things.
Yes. Well, if the actions of the locals there now are any indication, they probably be pretty good guards of that place.
They make their livelihood with everyone that's coming there. You know,
so. Absolutely, yeah. That's a cash cow for them. No pun intended. Anyway, thanks for joining us today, Dave. Really appreciate it.
Great to hear you, Scott.
All right. There is a gas station at Mount Sinai. There's a village at Mount Sinai. What else is there? You're going to see it up close and personal with Kevin Fisher. It is episode 4 of Sinai New Discoveries coming up next.
It's no secret that 2020 has become the most unpredictable and the most disturbing year in recent memory. But the question is, what is our role as believers? Michael Rood welcomes Bill Cloud for The End Is Not Yet, a special edition love gift teaching about what is going on in our world and what you can do about it.
In a very short time, we are going to have to be making certain decisions that are going to affect the outcome, not only of this nation, but of this world. And so as the servants of the Almighty, it is very important that we seek His will.
The End Is Not Yet is an exclusive teaching you won't see anywhere. The only way to get it is to receive it as our gift to thank you for your support. Donate a $50 love gift and we'll send you The End Is Not Yet on DVD or Blu-ray. Or for a donation of $100, we'll send you the teaching, plus a tall latte coffee mug inscribed with the Hebrew name of Yehovah and Michael Rood's new Apostles' Creed printed on a cozy 5-foot microfleece blanket. Or as a special offer for a donation of $300, we'll send you The End Is Not Yet, the latte coffee mug with the Hebrew name of God, the new Apostles' Creed blanket, plus a canvas print depicting ancient worshipers going up to Jerusalem for the fall feasts. These gifts are available only in October, and supplies are limited. Make your donation now and receive the $50 gift, the $100 gift, or the $300 gift. Remember, this offer ends October 31st, and supplies are limited. Thank you for your donation to A Rood Awakening International. Call now to receive your gifts, 888-766-3610, or get your gifts online at monthlylovegift.com.
Several years ago, I was in the land of Israel and having Sabbath dinner with a group of Messianic Jews. They brought out the Negelvesser, the two-handled pot, and they said this prayer in Hebrew, "Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who sanctified us by your commandments, commanding us concerning the washing of hands." I stopped. I said, this is exactly what Yeshua did not do. He said, this is takanot. This is a commandment that is added by the Pharisees, and Yeshua said, do not follow the takanot and ma'asim of the Pharisees. Don't do what they do. Say you're doing it for me. Yeshua said, as often as you do this, this is what you do. You take the bread, and especially on Shabbat, we do this in remembrance of him. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu melech haolam, hamotzi lechem min haaretz. This is how Yeshua blessed the Most High, with the very blessing that Melchizedek spoke to Abraham. And Abraham saw Yeshua's day and he rejoiced because he recognized the broken body, and Yeshua said, this is my body, which is broken for you. As often as you do this in remembrance of me. And then Yeshua took the cup. He said, Baruch atah Yehovah, Eloheinu melech haolam, borei pri hagafen. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, creator of the fruit of the vine. And Yeshua said, this represents the renewed covenant in my blood. As often as you break this bread and you drink this cup and you say this prayer, you recognize that it is all about me. It is all about me, and that you'll be drinking this cup with me in my Father's kingdom. L'chaim. Shabbat shalom.
Find five Westerners tonight who were kidnapped earlier today by Kurdish rebels.
Amateur archaeologist believes he's found the ruins of Noah's Ark.
I would stake my life on the fact that I know where the Ark of the Covenant is.
This rock I'm holding in my hand was given to A Rood Awakening International from Randall Lee and Mary Nell Wyatt Lee. Yes, Ron Wyatt's wife. Who is now married to Randall Lee. And they had gone to Mount Sinai and they had collected a couple of samples. And they brought one of those samples back to A Rood Awakening International. And I want you to see this rock here. You can see that on top it is black and at the bottom it is brown. And Kevin Fisher, a lot of people would say that this is, oh, well, it's just two different types of rock. But I want to show you something that I did when I first held this rock. Okay. When I was first given the opportunity to hold this thing, I was shaking. I was like, are you kidding me? I'm holding the mountain of God in my hand.
And you're very
with
strong.
Evidence of the his fire that came
That's
down.
That's amazing.
Now people say, oh, no, it's just a different color rock. But I want to show you something.
Now the bottom side.
Okay, the bottom is brown. Yeah. And this is like, as you mentioned, just before we turn the cameras on, this is like a cross section where something broke off. You can see the black on top and the brown on the bottom.
Yes.
Now, I did something with this rock and I didn't expect it to be what I thought it was, but I want you to experience it here. I'm gonna just rub it a little bit to, I'm not sure what this, that it releases something
and
on the
you're
rock.
Heating it up.
Heating it, I get, and I want you to smell it. I want you to tell me what you smell when you smell it.
Yeah.
Right where I rubbed. What does that smell like?
Charcoal or something.
It,
It does, doesn't it? It's burnt something.
It's burnt.
It's burnt.
It's a superficial coating.
It's amazing. We talked about this on the last episode that you joined us for Shabbat Night Live, that it is a superficial coating, the blackened peak, the charcoal, like you said. And a friend of yours actually was able to accidentally wash
the black coating off. And that's sad, but he donated his rock for science, apparently. Oh. But amazing that the, you know, evidence of God's fire, that's what that is.
It is amazing, yeah. So we are going to explore more of the area where the Israelites lived. And on the previous episode, I had also mentioned, I got a site mixed up. I said that there were wells that I heard of around the Split Rock. And you said, I don't think so. And I thought, well, gosh, I've heard that somewhere. But you're about to show us something here that those wells are around a certain area, but I got the area wrong. Yes. This is where the Israelites had watered their flocks. But what area is this that we're about to show here?
Yeah, so this is in front of the mountain. If we see in the image here, the still, we can look at it here. There's a river or creek that came down the mountain next to the altar. We saw that previously. As it came down the mountain, it collected in front of the mountain and created a type of lake in front of the area there. We see on the left side here, there's a depression or lower area. And we're going to fly the drone over there next to that spot, and we're going to see a series of five or six round formations that were vertical wells going down. They were lined with stones. We see the tops of the stones of some of them in our drone video here, but I can start the video going here.
So this is how the Israelites were able to stay here and get water.
It collected in this area, didn't just run away, and we're taking off from the main road headed toward this lake area in the bottom left.
So according to the building that we just passed there, it's almost like a little retention pond. You can sort of see the signs of that there.
Right, yeah, and that's a guardhouse on the right for the area, and then the fence saying this is an archaeological area, a sign there. But here is the edge of the lake, and in the bottom area here, we see a round area that's been dug out. One of them was dug out in 1985 when Ron went back there with the Saudi authorities.
Oh, I see it there now, yes.
And okay, we'll stop it here, and I'll kind of outline four of them with some white discs here. And there you see, and there's actually one or two continuing to the left. We'll go on the ground here and take a look at them. But so these, the water would come in through the sand into these wells. And so you would have basically, you know, filtered water coming into the bottom of these wells. The lake would feed these wells.
You know, it's amazing. Wow, look at that. Look at that. So this is a remnant here of another one.
Yes, this is a semicircular shape there. You know, they would have been round. This is one that they dug out. And there's a ladder still going down in there. I think they went down 10 feet or so, and they think it went down further than that.
So these have all been filled in.
They've been filled in, you know, over 3,500 years. More round or semicircular.
Very close together.
Shapes, they're right, you know, in orderly fashion. Another one here, part of one, and there's part of one at that spot.
And like you said, this was at the edge of that, well, we saw
it's
it at the
lake.
Edge of that lake.
Yes.
So this is would have been, now this is for the same reason. A lot of people, why don't we freeze it there for a second, talk about this, because this is amazing. How you mentioned that the water would have been filtered by the sand, and we know from the biblical record that when the Israelites had pots of clay or anything like that that touched anything unclean or anything dead, they were to get rid of those. They could keep any kind of metal utensil that they had, but they had to get rid of the clay, because the clay, as many people know from using nowadays, it's kind of a hot topic, is bentonite clay, which will filter out a lot of impurities and get rid of it from the body. So as you mentioned, the water will be filtered through the sand.
Through the sand, yeah.
And filtered through clay. So basically what would happen is, if something was unclean and got into that clay, it would remain in the clay
because the clay
collected the impurities, okay, and that's why they were to toss
it. So it's the filter that grabs the impurities.
So this makes a lot of sense.
Yes. So this was probably God's plan. I imagine he told, you know, Moses to create these. They were here approximately a year, the children of Israel. And so, you know, digging these out, it benefited them, you know, a great period of time, basically. So quite amazing. Again, you know, more evidence of their having been here. So it's a great benefit to go to these sites here.
Now, how do we know for sure that these are wells? Someone just didn't, like a...
Because the stones, you know, continue down so far.
Oh, they do?
The casings, you could say. That's what the stones create is a casing. They continue way down. I know the 10 feet, you know, they continue down, and I read somewhere that they went down even further than that.
So at the top here, these are essentially just markers for what's really
below. Well, that's actually the top of the casing. Those rocks continue straight down, all those rocks. They're not just on the surface.
Wow.
They go all the way down. So, you know, you got 3 million people, 800,000 men or whatever. They could easily, you know, form these or dig them out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll continue the video here. Here's a still pic of it.
I still find it so curious that the Saudi people who are not Israelites have protected this.
That's right. I mean, they respect Moses, which is a good thing. And here you can see how elevated this one is.
Okay. Oh, I see the stone. Okay, the casing that goes down. I see that now on the edge there.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, how far across are they? About 6 feet across?
No, it's more like 12 or 16. These are large.
Yeah.
So, again, that's the one that was dug out. So, again, evidence of there having been there for some time. Now, I flew the drone near this guy's house, near that white guard shack. He got angry, came over, ran his truck in front of mine, trying to block me off. He got out yelling and screaming, waving his cell phone. I jumped to my truck. I took off 60 miles an hour. He passed me going 80, and he blocked the road. This is a 10-minute standoff that we had.
Oh, my goodness. That must have been a little nerve-wracking.
In reverse, if he gets out with a gun, but at least tell him to come up beside him so we can talk to him. And
so it was a standoff, and finally, another local there came up beside me to help us out. We had said hi to him previously.
He's being mean.
Of course, the guy didn't understand English, but I tried to show a motion of a fist. We'll see it here in a second.
To book. That way.
To book.
He's blocking the road.
He doesn't want us to go by.
Yes.
And so he's asking, do we want to go to book? Yes, we want to go to book, which would be that direction. He went up there to speak to the man. The man was calling the police, I believe. So this lasted for 10 minutes, but this is part of it.
What was going through your mind at this point?
We didn't know what this guy was going to do. He's acting like a crazy idiot. Very angry about the drone, but didn't go over his house. I know where his house is. It's to the right of that guard shack. And Dan got out to go to talk to him. His door was open. A guy came up behind me to block me in, another guy. I saw it coming. I backed up 2 feet real quick. I turned the truck to the left to try to get around both trucks.
We got to book. Get in, Dan, quick.
And so we're telling Dan, get in the truck. We're going to try to go around both vehicles. And Dan got in the vehicle, and we took off. And the thing is, 7 miles down the road is another village. And so I'm thinking, is he going to call his friends
ahead
in the next village and say, stop these guys?
Mm.
So we had, you know, 7 miles to see, you know, what's going to happen next. And luckily nothing happened.
Wow.
But...
Well, you say you don't have a movie here, but I'd say this is a movie.
So, you know, we'd heard stories about, you know, the locals there, you know, trying to get money out of you. And I was thinking ahead of time, they're not going to get any money out of me, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep them from, you know, harassing us if I can, you know. But so anyway, we made it out of there. Now this was another stop we made north of Mount Sinai, about 5 miles. You know, we're told in the Bible that the children of Israel were dancing around the golden calf, and there were 3,000 that were not repentant. And God ordered the men of the tribe of Levi to execute them. And this is one of two sites that they're basically side by side, you know, a couple hundred yards apart. This one, some people think, is a more modern site. It's got these cairns here, or these grave markings, and they're semicircular shape. But we're going to see these similar shapes over at Mount Sinai in a minute.
Huh.
So it's like they're sort of linked, you know, these formations, semicircular shapes. But these are types of headstones.
I was going to say, it looks like a tombstone of some kind.
Yeah. So now some people, you know, again, say this is more modern, but we're going to see another site that's kind of similar.
But it's protected, obviously, with this wall.
They have a wall around it. The gate had been torn down, but we weren't disturbing anything, just taking photos.
So obviously, again, here, even the locals recognize this is something special.
At least, you know, the Saudi authorities do. They've got it walled off.
That's a significant wall. That's not some barbed wire fence.
Yes, it's a large, large wall.
Has anyone exhumed anything?
That's what I was wondering. If they've been excavated, I'm sure there would be something here, but you never know about, you know, grave robbers over 3,000 years, what could disappear. Hmm. But a lot of circular, semicircular shapes. Now, the area, like I said, just to the west of this, southwest, this has got a fence around it, regular chain link fence, again, archaeological sign. And this is a larger area. The gate was not open there.
And this is another suspected grave site.
This is, yes. And in my drone, we're gonna see some circular shapes. I didn't see it that day, but looking in the video afterwards, you can see some.
Do those circular shapes mean anything? Do we find that in any other culture?
I don't know. If we stop the video here,
okay.
On the left, you can see a circular formation of stones.
Yes.
On the left, and there's some others to the right of that and down.
We see them there, yeah.
So there, and I'll start the video again here. But so to me, it kind of links them together, you know, these circular shapes. And up at the top right, where there's more stones, there's some vertical stones for headstones that we're going to take a look at here. Scott Parvey shared these with me. They're from that area.
Yeah, we have some photos like this on our calendar, the astronomically and agriculturally corrected Hebrew calendar from last year.
Okay. So now these, I guess, could be dated all the way back to the children of Israel, those sites there. Now back at Mount Sinai proper, you can see some of these cairns, these monuments that are semi-circular in shape. Again, the same concrete block wall. There's Mount Sinai in the distance, okay? The peak, and we're east of it over here, and looking over the wall. So this is putting these here at Mount Sinai, and we saw them, you know, 5 miles away. So our next topic is going to be the golden calf altar.
Ah, yes.
Which, luckily, the gate was open.
That's a rarity. I've heard that most people that try to go there, they can't get in.
That's true. I'll stop the video here, but Jake Wilson was telling me that when he went here, I guess January of 20, that a local there had the gate chain closed, had it locked, and he was demanding $200 from each person that wanted to go in. So again,
there was a ticket booth.
Yeah, I mean, the locals are taking over these sites and they're trying to get money out of visitors. You know, I hope the authorities want to take control of the area instead of the locals wanting to make money, you know, off of
tourists. I suppose they'll continue to do that until the Saudi government comes in.
I know. You would think there'd be some type of order, you know, that would take place. I need a visitor center here and, you know, walkways, tour guides even maybe.
Well, just like they had at the, Jethro's Caves. I mean, that was very well orchestrated. They preserved the place.
A nice museum there, yes.
Well, hopefully Neom will solve some of that. This may be a park in the middle of the
city. They need to preserve it. I mean, they respect Moses, like we've said before. So they ought to give this more credibility and organization.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is amazing that you actually got into the fence. We only have about a couple of minutes left, but take us for a short tour here and we'll continue after the break.
Yeah, so we're gonna start walking around, we'll start the video, start walking around the golden calf altar. The golden calf would have been placed on top of this.
And he knows what this is.
He's directing the way
here. Oh, I see, yeah.
And Dan here is taking a picture of some painted murals here in red ochre paint. These are not chiseled in, but they're painted. And you can see them in red here. You can see the Apis bull. You see a couple of them, and then some ibex. Another bull at the top next to the red man. Quite amazing. Again, you know, these are of Egyptian design, these Apis bulls, which you don't normally see in Saudi Arabia.
Exactly. Why would they be in Saudi Arabia? It doesn't make any sense. It's across the sea.
Yes.
Amazing.
And we can see how this relates to Mount Sinai, not far away.
In plain view.
It's across the main road. And here near my hand are some like triangular red shapes. I don't know what that is. There's a number of them. You see the red man and then these red triangles. I don't know if those are shields. What is that, you know?
Interesting. Well, I'm sure someone will figure that out eventually. And hopefully if there's more tourism and more archaeological digs and research that goes on here, we will find out. So why don't we freeze it here and we'll just, we're gonna save the best for last here. We're gonna come back and we're gonna come back here with more from Kevin Fisher. And we will have another segment here. This was actually a bonus. We didn't think we'd be able to have another episode with you here, but we wanna thank you, Kevin, for being here.
Thank you.
We will come back in just a few minutes. And again, if you'd like to support what Kevin is doing, arkdiscovery.com is his website. And of course you wanna support Shabbat Night Live so we can continue bringing Kevin back and other folks to show us this amazing things, please go to arudawakening.tv/give, or you can call us at 888-766-3610. We really appreciate anything you can donate. Again, there's no sponsor here. You are our only sponsor. We thank you for doing it, and we'll give you a couple minutes. Thank you. Well, welcome back, and thank you for your support of Shabbat Night Live. It's thanks to your support that we can bring on folks like Kevin Fisher, and we are talking about the altar to the golden calf, and we're about to bring in something in a few minutes here. I've never heard before that Ron Wyatt had actually dug up Aaron's grave. Is that right?
We'll see that later in the segment here. Yes, okay. Over at Mount Hor. So that's coming up here shortly. Right now we're at the Golden Calf Altar in front of Mount Sinai.
Okay.
And we're gonna walk around here and see, we're starting the video here.
Okay.
See the various inscriptions at the area, and the gentleman there was kind of pointing out various inscriptions of the Apis bulls that we're going to see.
He needs to be the tour guide when they start selling real tickets to this place.
Well, we tried to give him a tip, and he wouldn't, you know, take any money. But so here's a nice layout of, in the foreground is a smaller altar, and in the main Golden Calf altar is this larger one here. Again, we see the Mount Sinai in the distance. It's quite a view right here. If you can imagine the golden calf on top of this.
quite an effort to build that thing. They had to really...
Some people say it's natural, natural because of the way the stones are cracked.
Okay.
That it's actually kind of a natural stack.
But still, you could tell, like right at the top there, you can envision the golden calf on a pedestal there.
It would be kind of impressive, yeah.
And of course, the inscriptions are what give it away.
Yes, the Apis bulls. Now, here's the secondary altar. They said they offered sacrifices to the golden calf. Well, this is a secondary altar, and of course, the fences around it also. We see the peak of Mount Sinai in the distance, but so the animal sacrifices. This is the main altar, and then we're looking in back of that to the smaller altar where the animal sacrifices would have been made.
So they made the sacrifices on the smaller altar to the calf on the larger altar.
Yeah, the animal sacrifices are made right here apparently. And now we're walking back toward the main altar area. The stack of stones here. Oh,
and there they are.
Kevin.
And you can see the Apis bulls, the ibex. And these are Egyptian style.
Now, the Saudis did not have these type of, or whoever, the Midians or whoever lived there.
They don't have these type of drawings. This is, you know, Egyptian style. The top left here, this looks, you know, Egyptian. And you see some smaller ones. And again, going over top of the stack. And I'm going to stop it right here, but... you know, it was the tribe of Levi that tried to stop this from happening as it was taking place. And a lot of them were killed by these rebels. You know, if you try to stop apostasy, you're the troublemaker. You need to be put down. But these men tried to stand for what was right. And as a result of their trying to do that, you know, they were appointed to oversee the tabernacle. The tribe of Levi, and so it was, you know, quite impressive, you know, to understand that these men tried to stop this, and they were killed. But, you know, that's what we need to do today. We need to stand up against apostasy, you know, stand for God. So we're going to continue our walk around the stack of stones here, and here's another area you can see. More Egyptian style.
And again, the desert has left this relatively untouched. All of the drawings are obviously on the darker parts of the rock.
Yes, it's amazing they're still here. They could have been, you know, more of them back in the day.
It looks like it. Some of them are chipped off.
Some have been broken off possibly. But it's amazing this much is left. I'm glad they put the fence around the area. But, you know, they do need some authorities out here letting people in the fenced-in area.
I wonder how many of these drawings have been tried or have been attempted to be chipped off and sold on a black market.
That's possible, yeah. They need some order. I wouldn't mind paying a fee, you know, to get in here, you know, if they would establish some type of order. So here we are with the drone. You can see these up higher on the rocks, these Apis bulls.
Mm. And some recent rainfall and a puddle on the top.
Yes, and there is that crevice or concave area on top. It could have been where they ground the calf down up on top. Mm. Again, you see another bowl shape.
It is amazing to me how these things are just, with the dry heat, essentially baked into history. They don't go anywhere. They're just there.
It's amazing how God's preserved it. Now, here's several more. So, I mean, this fits in with the story. You know, golden calf. Here are all these Apis bulls. And there we see Mount Sinai in the distance. It's a good view.
Now, is there any...
Go ahead. That could be where they ground the calf down, right there. That depression. It could have been ground on top of there. Mr. White wondered if that did take place up on top of the rocks here.
Has any gold detection ever been attempted
there? He actually saw a sheen at some point where it could have been residue of gold on top. So quite amazing.
Entirely possible, for sure, because this is obviously the spot.
Yes. And so now we're sending the drone around.
And it came to pass, as soon as he came nigh unto the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing, and Moses' anger waxed hot, and he cast the tables out of his hands and brake them beneath the mount.
And so that is the Mount Sinai area.
Then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, into the desert of Zin in the first month. And the people abode in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. And there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron.
And so we're going to head up to Kadesh Barnea. This is an area where Moses struck the rock, but he actually sinned in doing so. He was just supposed to speak to the rock. And so we're in the wilderness of Zin in southern Israel. And this is an area with a large amount of erosion on the rocks.
Again, from water, obviously, here.
Yes, a high volume of water had eroded away the rock. We'll see it here shortly.
Almost looks like a dry glacier.
Yes. And my particular drone here is a little bit damaged.
a little shaky.
Pilot error, I guess you could say. And over here on the right, in the shadows, this is where the water came rushing down. And you see these cutouts in the rock and also on the sides. Even the sides here on the left are washed smooth. Then you see these cutouts in the rock from high volume of water running fast.
Swirling around in a rapids type of thing.
Yeah, digging these out. This couldn't happen in just some gentle rainfall.
So again, this is the second rock.
Yes.
And I understand there is, even in this spillway, there are rocks that were purposely placed there as baffles.
Yes, we're going to see that baffle rock here in a moment. Again, see this erosion on the right? This is high level of water having to erode the rock away. And there's the baffle rock we're going to look at on the left. But here's where the water would have rushed down out into the encampment. So we've basically been following the children of Israel from site to site on our journey.
Apparently seeing evidence of it along the way.
It's amazing. You know, this is biblical evidence, one site after another.
It looks like there is not an absence of water here at this, you know, at this point in time.
They apparently had, you know, a gentle rain of some sort before my visit here. There's the baffle rock in the center. Now, it was eroding the rock rather deep. I assume they wanted it to spread out instead of continuing to cut the rock down. It's like 6 feet deep in that area. But here's some more of the erosion.
Wow, definitely powerful. There is some.
Yes, and this communicates to that baffle rock. This is, you know, 6 feet deep right here. And it appears they placed this in here vertically, and it would have caused the water to spray outwards. They would have placed it over here to the right where it's wider, and it would have become wedged in this spot. And so that's the encampment in the distance, and the water would have flown down.
Oh, and there you see the sediment being held back.
Yes, and it's wider back here. They could stick the rock in here. It was pushed into this spot. And quite amazing. Mr. Wyatt did some, I believe it was a frequency detector test out in the encampment area. He was picking up gold readings in a certain area, which could be consistent with those people that were swallowed up. The earth opened and swallowed them.
Ah, yes, okay.
Yes. And I believe he found some artifacts out in the encampment area also. I found some type of carving when I was out there, one of my trips out there. But so this is in the wilderness of Zin. And he struck the rock in anger, you know, which is sad.
And do we have that, where that rock is?
I didn't see, you know, a definite rock per se. I don't know if it...
So it's not as obvious as the split rock.
I don't know if it broke into many pieces, you know, and basically disintegrated or what, but there's not a nice big rock there like you see over in Saudi Arabia.
And the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, journeyed from Kadesh and came unto Mount Hor. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in Mount Hor, take Aaron and Eleazar his son, and bring them up unto Mount Hor, and strip Aaron of his garments, and put them upon Eleazar his son. And Aaron shall be gathered unto his people, and shall die there.
So this is in the wilderness of Zin also. This is another encampment that they made around this mountain, Mount Hor. And it was here that Aaron was buried on top, we're told. And we're gonna go ahead and climb up the mountain. Takes about 45 minutes.
I was gonna ask, is that a sandy surface? But now we see it, it's quite solid.
Well, it is kind of soft. It's kind of loose material as you're going up. It's not pure sand per se, but it's rock, sand.
So how did Ron know where on this mountain that
Aaron I don't know. I believe he used, you know, different types of detectors to help him locate the site. And so we're climbing up the ladders here.
Oh, obviously you're not the first.
Yeah, right. This is actually kind of a public site. And it's kind of an L-shape design shape, the mountaintop. But it stands out from the valley, just goes straight up, you know, the sides of the mountain. Very unique looking.
Wow, look at the view from up there.
So they would have been encamped all around here. On top here, you see how flat it is. And again, the area where they could have encamped.
Large area, just like Sinai.
Yes, and there we see on top, I'll stop the video here, but so Mr. Wyatt, I heard, I've never heard him actually say this, but I heard that he did dig up Aaron's grave. It was a stone sarcophagus, and he opened up the top, and Aaron had a type of gold headdress on. I believe it might say in Hebrew, holiness to the Lord, and he took that off Aaron's head and took it to the Ark of the Covenant cave and left it there inside the Ark of the Covenant cave. He didn't stick it in his back pocket or have it melted down, you know. But Mr. White would go to the Ark of the Covenant cave quite frequently when he was visiting Israel. And so he took that into the cave and left it there. And perhaps one day, you know, we'll get to see that when someone else gets to go back into the Ark of the Covenant cave and remove the Ten Commandment stones and bring them out. And there's a video of Ron Wyatt in there of him removing the Ten Commandment stones from the Ark of the Covenant. So anyway, so Mr. Wyatt was able to open Aaron's grave here. Now, a friend of mine was up there on top of the mountain with Mr. Wyatt, and Mr. Wyatt said, there's Aaron's grave. And so my friend went down to the car and brought a shovel up, and he proceeded to dig. And he dug down, and he hit the top of a stone sarcophagus. And this was confirming, you know, what Mr. Wyatt said. So we'll continue the video here. It's flat on top. You can see the other end of the mountain down there. So again, this is another biblical site of Mount Hor in the wilderness of Zin. Some people think that means wilderness of sin. You know, this is where Moses sinned by striking the rock in anger instead of speaking to it. and we're going to try to make our way down here.
And for those who are not familiar with where this is in Israel, where is this exactly in Israel?
It's about 20 miles or so southwest of the Dead Sea, area.
So near Sodom, Gomorrah, all those types of sites?
About 20 miles from there. Yes, that's a crow flies, I guess. So I believe this might be called Mount Zin or something on your local maps.
But it is accessible, apparently. They're not too worried about people falling off, I guess, at your own risk.
I saw a number of people coming out there. I was out there for some time, out there by myself. Again, the view, if you can imagine the children of Israel all around there. So that is the Mount Hor in Israel. And I've got some credits here I'd like to show for folks who've helped me in the last four programs here.
Certainly.
And we appreciate their help putting this together, various pictures and video to make it complete. So
very good. Excellent. Thank you for sharing that, Kevin.
Yes.
I really appreciate that. And you know,
thanks for having me.
Some folks would say, well, you know, that sounds like a bunch of hooey, all the stuff about digging up Aaron and things, but one day the Ark of the Covenant will be revealed.
That's right.
We are promised that.
It's very soon, yes.
And when that is found, and lo and behold, I believe that this stuff is there, and let's hope it's there.
Yes,
it is. If it's there, that will put to rest forever Ron's claims. Everything will be found out, and like the Bible says, everything will be found out.
So that's right. Time is very short. We can see the world in unrest right now and so forth, and it's going to continue to the end. But yeah, thanks for letting me share.
Certainly.
The Exodus route. Exodus journey there.
It has been a distinct pleasure. Thank you for bringing this footage to us. I really hope you make this into a movie. And like you said, you may put it on YouTube someday or whatever, but we hope that you bring this out for everyone to see. And we are very appreciative that you, and just honored that you chose us to show it first.
Yeah, thanks for sharing it on YouTube and so forth and your DVDs. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us for this series with Kevin Fisher. We hope you've enjoyed it. And again, if you'd like to support what Kevin does, go to arkdiscovery.com. And thank you for supporting Shabbat Night Live. We'll see you next week. Shabbat Shalom.